All right, so CLR 4.5 world continues. And in this world, we're with Sean Farkas. You're a developer.
I am.
On the CLR team.
I am.
And what are you working on?
So most people know me from security, but I'm actually vastly different this time around. I'm working
Good
on,
for you.
Working on the CLR support for Windows Runtime.
Excellent.
Which is sort of the new thing for CLR 4.5 that our team's focused on.
Okay.
And specifically working on how the CLR provides an interesting and natural programming model for managed developers against the Windows Runtime model.
Excellent. Now, of course, when you're saying Windows Runtime, we're talking about Windows 8.
Yes.
And so we're also going to talk to another fellow about some of the stuff, but he's going to be a little more high level.
Right.
We're going to go down to the metal in this one and talk about where the CLR meets the runtime, the exactly. Windows runtime, that
yes.
is, and what that means for developers who happen to use managed code.
Yeah, exactly. And how a managed developer uses APIs that have to be exposed to C++ and JavaScript developers as well. That's Windows Runtime's goal, mm-hmm. but makes them feel like they're actually managed APIs to manage developers.
Excellent.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what you did.
That is what we did.
Yes.
That's what
Excellent.
We've been working on for the last year now.
Okay. So let's talk about it.
Yeah. Great. So Windows Runtime, it provides APIs defined in metadata files, WinMD files that I think you've talked with Richard about a bit.
Yeah.
And these APIs are defined in a way that is sort of language agnostic, right? They don't want to define, here's what C# should use this API as, because that doesn't make sense for a VB developer, let alone a JavaScript developer.
Mm.
So what our job was is to make sure that the metadata defined an API that a C# and a VB developer would be able to use without having to put a ton of effort into the compilers. We tried to use common language runtime, so any managed language should be able to take advantage as much as possible of the CLR sort of adapting the Windows metadata to be more familiar.
Okay.
Now, there are a few compiler tweaks. It's not to say that any language will just, out of the box, immediately be a Windows Runtime consumer, but to a large level, the CLR masks over lots of the interesting details.
Good. Excellent. And let's talk a little bit about these details. So,
sure.
Pick one.
So, the very first thing you run across is that there's this object model, right? That Windows defines a bunch of types in their Windows metadata files, and obviously you want to new some of those up, set properties, call methods.
Mm-hmm.
What does it even mean to new up a Windows object, right? We used to have TLBs in the common interop days, and we moved away from those a bit in V4 with the Nopia infrastructure. So we clearly didn't want to go back to that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you obviously don't have a managed object sitting behind these things, since every language has to use this. So what we do is we sort of build on top of the common interop support, and we have strongly typed RCWs, our runtime callable wrappers.
Mm.
And what these do is that we read the type right out of the Windows metadata file, and that is the type you're using. Right? Your type, if you're newing up a windows.ui.xaml.button, the managed type is going to say windows.ui.xaml.button.
Mm.
And what the CLR does is we're going to hook every method call on that type. And when you try to call out to it, that's where we're going to inject our magic and figure out how to translate what you just did to something meaningful to Windows Runtime, and then vice versa.
Okay. Now, the first thing that comes to my mind is there's, in some sense, what does this mean for the performance of managed apps? Because you're doing more work.
We are.
What does it mean?
So we're very sensitive about performance. It's one of the areas we've invested the most in and we're continuing to invest on.
Mm-hmm.
What we do is actually inject an IL method body behind the scenes for you. And we can walk through a little bit of what that method body would be and what it looks like. So once you're actually running, you have a JITted method that is invoked and it becomes a COM method call underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
So performance is it's actually reasonably good. You can end up with, because this is an IL method body, you can actually ngen these interop methods.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you profile and you find out that, mm-hmm. that things are problematic, you can get around it that way. And in fact, one of the features that another team on the CLR is working on is automatic ngen. So it'll notice you're using these WinMD files and it'll say, okay, wait a minute, let me generate these ngen stubs for you so that nothing has to happen at runtime.
Excellent. And if you needed to, you could always just rejit parts of your code. We learned about that as well.
Yes, you could.
A little bit of a different scenario, but still, it's interesting.
Yep.
Very cool.
Yes.
All right, let's get you on the whiteboard, man.
Some of this stuff.
Yep.
So underneath the covers, Windows Runtime itself, at the ABI level, and it's sort of, it's interesting when you're down at this lower level. to differentiate ABI and API.
Yeah.
ABI being the actual bits that are going across the literal method call that's transitioning from managed code into Windows.
Yes.
And API being the surface area that you're calling against, right? The logical thing you're trying to do.
Okay.
The ABI level, Windows Runtime, is just built upon COM. It's the same familiar COM ops concepts. So when you have a class, you have an interface pointer to COM, add, ref, release, and all this stuff, which is why we can build upon our CCW infrastructure that's already in place.
Okay.
And sort of go from there.
Okay.
Now, what we've done, so just to start with newing up an object, is build these methods behind the scenes that do what you logically try to do at the API level for you as a managed developer. So in Windows Runtime, activating an object goes through what's called a factory pattern. And if you look at the Windows metadata file, you'll see this defined. If you have a class
in metadata that says class C, and let's say it's got a parameter list constructor and a constructor that takes a string.
In metadata, now I'm not going to write this out as in metadata tables, but logically what this looks like is you have up here an attribute that says activatable. And an attribute that says activatable, let's just say IC factor.
Okay.
What these attributes mean in Windows Runtime speak is that this class is default app constructible and is constructible via a factory interface, which you'll find somewhere else in the metadata file. IC factory. And this guy will have a create C method that returns a C and takes a string. And so calling this constructor is equivalent to finding an instance of a C factory and calling this create C method, which returns you out of C. That's not a natural experience for managed developers. They want to say new C, pass in a string.
Okay.
So when you do say new C and pass in a string, what the CLR does underneath the covers for you is we'll say, okay, that's a constructor. And we'll walk through the metadata looking at all of the activatable attributes. Right? You can actually have as many of these as you want with various class factories. And we'll resolve the interface back down here and look for a method that has a signature which matches the constructor signature which you were using.
Okay.
Once we find that method, we'll say, aha, you must be referring to this create C method on this IC factory. At that point, we go to the Windows runtime. They have a native API that anybody can call. Managed developers probably won't want to call it very much, which says, get me an instance of the factory for class C. Right? This returns us back an iActivation factory star. Yeah, COM pointer again.
Yep.
Which we can QI for this interface and call this method for you. So what we've actually done is we've generated an IL method for you behind here, which calls into the CLR and says, hey, CLR, please go ahead and find me this factory method. The CLR will return back the factory method, and then we will invoke the factory object and return back that C as if it was the result of the new operation.
Mm.
So from C#, all you did is type new C. Behind the scenes, we went through all this sort of ABI level stuff to hide that from you.
Excellent. I mean, in some sense, that's also what the sort of modern C++ is doing as well, right?
Yes,
I mean, you
exactly.
have very interesting. So COM has become this sort of intermediate
yes.
kind of representation or proxy to the API, for the Windows API.
Right.
So COM plays a huge role in all of this.
It does.
It's very interesting to see it sort of, maybe we should have called it the COM Renaissance.
All right, right on. So that another interesting thing comes in when you say, all right, I'm passing in this string method. Maybe it's not a constructor. Maybe it's just another method on a class, right, which has a string or and a date time offset. Well, when you call this, you're passing in managed types. Now, the Windows runtime is not going to deal in managed types. That doesn't make sense to the C++. That doesn't make sense to JavaScript.
Mm-hmm.
So this Windows runtime defines a set of interchange types at the base ABI level. It says these are the types that we talk about when we talk about string, when we talk about the concept of datetime offset. So what the CLR has to do is the CLR has to convert what you've got here in your signature down to that exchange type, because the result of this call may actually end up in C++. It may wind up in JavaScript. It may come back to C#. We don't know.
Okay.
And we don't. One of the nice things is we don't actually care. You can swap out the implementation at any point if you need to.
Cool. So what we actually do is we'll build up a method on the fly behind the scenes for you. And this method, we'll look at the signature and we'll say, okay, this thing takes a string and it takes a datetime offset. And, you know, let's just say it returns an integer.
Okay.
Right, and we'll generate something with this signature, and then we'll just iterate the argument. So we'll say, all right, we've got a managed string. This thing can't go to Windows Runtime as a managed string. It has to go out as what they call an H string. It's the Windows Runtime string exchange type. So we'll create a local in here of, you know, type H string. And we'll call the Windows Runtime API that converts data into an H string. We'll just read the data out of your string, convert it to an H string. You know, simplify it, but we'll assign there. I'll say datetime offset. Okay. Windows Runtime has the type datetime. So that's the translation there too.
Okay. Right?
And we'll create a Windows Runtime datetime. And we'll do the conversion here. Right? Now, it's not a straight conversion. With datetime in specific, there actually isn't an offset in the Windows Runtime version. Mm-hmm. So what we need to do is we have offset information in ours. We convert it to local time, and we marshal it out as if it were local time.
Okay.
Then we'll call the method that you wanted with these locals. And then, on the way back, we'll say, all right, well, this returned an integer. And it turns out integers are, you know, the same pretty much everywhere. It's 32 bits, it's 32 bits. So we just return the result. We build this up as soon as you invoke something with this method, signature.
Okay.
Then that gets jitted, and then it's run. So you actually don't have to pay the cost of doing all of this at runtime every time. As we were alluding to before, you've got a real jitted method body in place that can call to do this work. And similarly, if we see another method, you know, M2, it doesn't even have to be in the same class. It could be some other thing that has the same signature. We'll say, I already know how to do that signature. Mm-hmm. I've got a method over here that does it. We can just reuse the exact same method.
Great. Now, of course, you know, at this point, you are on the managed heap.
Yes.
Right? Even though you did this translation between things that go nowhere near a managed heap.
Right.
I mean, of course, you're just talking about types anyway.
Right.
You just have to sort of, you're matching patterns of what's expected to you, yep, of you at the lower level system. So the fact is, after you JIT, it's just as though it's always been.
Yes, it's still managed code.
Yes.
Which is, so when we pass out this string, we actually have to say, all right, we're allocating a native H string here, which means, now we can play some tricks here. We can say, if this parameter is marked as in, let's say, then we know for sure that that string is only going into the method. It's not being saved by the method, or the method would have to ref count it, right? Just by standard COM ownership rules. If that's the case, we can say, okay, we're going to pin our string on the stack, or on the heap, sorry, we're going to allocate a pin GC handle to that thing, and then we're going to send in the data exactly in place,
okay,
just for performance. If it's not marked in, or if it's out, or whatnot, then we will. We will copy your managed code data onto a native, you know, safe location, let it go out, and then when the lifetime semantics say it's no longer needed, then we'll release it.
Okay. Interesting.
But you don't have to worry about, for instance, the GC running behind you and when you're in the native code and having it trash the data you'd passed in.
Yeah.
The CLR in this method takes care of all of that for you.
Great. Very nice.
Yeah. The goal is that it looks just like a managed method to use, that you shouldn't have to think there might be native code back there. I better take care of pinning this, or I better take care of allocating, you know, marshal.coalloc task map. You should never have to call a marshal API.
Okay, great. I mean, you shouldn't. You decided up front to use managed code.
Exactly.
So
yeah, you don't want to think about the fact that the API you're calling is in C++.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't matter to you.
Right.
And so, in fact, in many cases, it is going to be C++.
Yes.
You just won't have to worry about
it. Exactly. You never have to know.
Cool.
So one of the things that's also interesting about this is that, you know, I was saying that this is string and this is datetime offset, but that's not really what Windows Runtime is using at its base level. And if you take this a step back, then that clearly can't be what's encoded in the Windows metadata file, because, you know, C++ team is not going to want to be reading a managed datetime offset to figure out how to convert their thing into that.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that the encoding in the Windows metadata file is actually that this takes the Windows Runtime version of these types.
Okay.
So it's a little bit interesting when you dive into the ECMA metadata spec. A Windows MD file, yeah. If you ever need some good nighttime reading, you just print out that PDF file.
Sure.
Windows metadata files adhere to the ECMA spec for metadata encoding.
Okay.
So you can use IL-DASM, you can use any of your normal metadata browsing tools.
Nice.
To you know, crack them open and see what's inside. There are a few extensions here and there. If you use a V4.5 IL-DASM, you'll have a slightly better experience. But even a V4.0 out-of-the-box IL-DASM will display this information.
Great.
If you crack it open, you'll notice there's sort of two different ways types are encoded in metadata. For primitives like string and integer and whatnot, there's actually sort of an enumeration of those. And this would be encoded as just element type string. Let's do E. Right, and this is just, you know, pick a number, it's 10, it's something. And everybody who reads that knows this is string. So this is relatively easy. The CLR will read this and say, okay, that's system.string. And, you know, C++ will read that and say that this is our version of what string is.
Okay.
Right. That one's not a problem. What's tricky is the datetime offset actually is encoded as windows.foundation.datetime. And you know, we already showed that managed developers aren't going to code against that, and you wouldn't want to. You've already got your datetime offset types. So what the CLR has to do is, as we read in the Windows metadata file, we notice, we say, aha, we have special knowledge about datetime. We know there's a better managed version of that type. And so any reference we see to windows.foundation.datetime, the metadata reader will replace with system.datetime offset.
Okay.
And there's about somewhere in the order of 30 of these types that would say, okay, we know a better version of this that managed developers are more used to. And each one of those will come through and replace with the managed version. For instance, there is an iVector of T concept in Windows Runtime, windows.foundation.collections.iVector of T, which is their fundamental list type. Managed developers don't want to be interacting with an iVector of T, right? They want to be interacting with an iList of T.
Okay.
So that's another one that we'll replace. We'll say, that's iVector. You really mean iList. And so in this way, we rewrite the signatures of these methods so that they make sense to managed developers. And this you know, lets C-sharp can just pass a list of int to any method that takes an iVector of int, because to the C-sharp compiler, this method takes an iList of int.
Okay.
Right. Now, for each one of those, obviously, we have to have some of this magic here, where when we create an IL file, or not an IL file, but IL in memory to do the marshalling, we need to know, all right, this was a date time, or this was an iVector of int. And now I have a managed iList of int and do some translation back and forth between the two.
Yes, because I mean the obvious example would be, in fact, if I, you know, one of the interesting scenarios in all of this is going to be the heterogeneous or hybrid interaction between very different runtimes, if you will, all running on top of the single Windows runtime.
Right.
So as you had mentioned, so in this case, I'm a little confused, because if in fact I have a C++ code running that expects an iVector, not an iList, doesn't know what the hell an iList is.
Exactly.
So you're going to do the
So that case is actually really interesting.
Okay.
So in these other cases, it was sort of data conversion, right? We had a system.string, we need to format it as an H-string. So sort of take your data and put it in memory in a such a way that it could be interpreted as this other data type. iVector and iList, that's not data. That's actually a contract
that
people code against.
Right? Oh, I got you, yes.
Right? And exactly right, that someone on the C++ side is going to say, I want to code against, you know, this iVector dot, you know, whichever method it has on it.
Okay.
It's not going to make sense if that method's not there.
Yeah.
So in those cases, what the CLR does is we provide what's called a CCW, or it's a COM callable wrapper, for managed objects. So if you have a list of int, and you're passing it to a method that takes a vector of int, this guy down here is going to, say takes a this guy down here is going to say, aha, this is a list, it needs to go out as a vector.
Okay.
So what it will do is it will do something to the effect of new com callable wrapper on the list. The com callable wrapper is going to say, aha, this is an iList. I know how to treat that as an iVector. So if the C++ caller does a query interface, because remember we're down to com for iVector, the com callable wrapper is going to say, sure, here's my iVector implementation. And what we can do is we can implement iVector in terms of iList.
Okay.
So we can provide a stub method, and in fact this is exactly what we did in the BCL. There's a stub method for each iVector method, and what it does is it says, given that I have a list, implement the vector's contract in terms of the list contract. And what this means is that any implementation of iList will work with this. If you've got an array that will go out as an ILIST if you've got a system, just a standard list of T, or if you've got your own custom object that implements ILIST, that will work that way. What's also interesting is the reverse scenario, where you've got an iVector coming in, and sort of the exact same thing happens. We have an RCW, it's a runtime callable wrapper, that can implement ILIST in terms of iVector. But what that means is you've actually got an ILIST. You don't have an iVector, you've got an honest-to-goodness ILIST. So for each works, and link works, which means you can use link over top of any Windows runtime collection.
Great. Excellent.
No extra, just sort of right out of the box, it'll work.
Cool, so you can use Rx then.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. So we've talked mostly about here about consumption of Windows runtime.
Yeah.
One of the nice things is managed code is we are also allowing you the ability to produce Windows runtime objects. Meaning, an object that can go out and follow the Windows Runtime ABI at the call level. So you can create a new type in your MetroStyle app written in C#, callable from JavaScript, for instance. Right? Or you've got some C++ code, and you want to call, for whatever reasons, part of your team is more comfortable in managed code, you can write a set of objects in C# and expose that out to C++, and the CLR will sort of take care of matching the boundary for you there.
Nice. All right.
And this works in a very similar way to what we've discussed.
Okay.
What you do is you sort of write your C# as you normally would. And we talked a little bit about these activatable attributes and all this metadata encoding, which is not what you would normally do for C#. Right? I wouldn't say, I need to create a factory interface and whatnot. And we didn't want you to have to think about that. So we've hidden that all the way in the tool chain. But what you would do is you just create a public class. Body to it. And we have a tool that's built into Visual Studio. You'll say, hey, I want to create a WinMD file, right? New C# WinMD is the type. And this will say, okay, we need to run the C# compiler followed by this export tool, which knows how to take a class like this and actually encode it and say, all right, this thing needs activatable attribute. Oh, and this thing has this guy. So it's going to spit out an interface for you, the factory interface. And it will tie this to this for you. The other thing it's going to do is it's going to validate that you follow the rules of the Windows Runtime ABI, which is something that might catch a few managed developers initially. Windows Runtime has a more limited public type system than the CLR does. So, for instance, we were talking about iVector of T. They do have generics, but there's no ability to offer new generic types. All the generic types are contained within the Windows Foundation WinMD file. So that you would not be able to expose an interface that was generic. We'll give you an error. And in fact, I gave this example here because this is one of the first things you'll run into. Windows Runtime does support inheritance. However, not all Windows Runtime languages can use inheritance. So by default, most Windows Runtime classes are sealed. When you type public class C, which is what every managed developer does sort of by default, we want you to realize that this is valid, but it may not be consumable from all languages. So we'll emit a warning on this, and we'll say, do you really mean this, or do you want this to be usable everywhere? And so after you're working it for a while, you can get a little bit into the habit of typing public sealed class, but that's the first thing you'll run into.
Okay. Well, that's an easy thing to get
It's
over.
An easy thing to catch. Yep.
Again, to be clear to everybody out there, this is for writing modern, if you will, quote-unquote, Windows 8, Metro-style apps that run on the Windows runtime. Just to be clear, this really isn't, in some sense, the other story, which is just a Windows app. And if you wrote it in Windows 7, it's going to work on Windows 8 in desktop mode.
That's right.
I just want, just so people understand this.
Yeah, this is Windows 8 only. This is Metro-style apps.
Got it. Cool. Windows runtime apps.
So one of the interesting things we've done here also is... Let's give another example of something that you might not be able to do is in managed code, you might want to have a method that takes pick your favorite thing, a system.xml document.
Okay.
That's not a Windows runtime type, so we can't expose that out to Windows runtime, right? But maybe you just want to use that internally in your code, right? So you have a private method, that takes an XML document.
Well, that's okay, because that's not being exposed out to Windows Runtime. Mm-hmm. So what we actually do when we export this for you is underneath the covers, we create what is called the Windows Runtime View of your class,
okay.
which is only the public surface area, which we're validating follows the rules, as I was saying earlier. Mm-hmm. If this was a public method, we'll say, oh, wait, you're using XML document. Don't use XML document. That's not a valid type. If you used list of T, which would be, might be another common thing, a lot of managed developers will use just list of int directly. Right? Those, mm-hmm. This method takes a list. But the Windows Runtime type is ilist. Right? So for this, we'll catch it and we'll say, well, rather than taking a list of int, why don't you take an ilist of int instead?
So, but I have to ask this, I mean, because I'm learning along with the rest of the audience who are watching this. One of the strengths of a object-oriented typed language
yes.
is people like to build types.
Yes.
That's what we do.
Yep.
Or, you know, those of us, or those people out there who actually do this stuff.
Yes.
So, what if I want to create a bunch of custom types?
You can create as many types as you want.
Okay.
You can create a ton of types. You got class C, class, you know, yeah, A, B, C, D, E. That's fine. They just have to follow the Windows Runtime rules. So, if you have a class C and you've got another class, you know, D, both of these are being exported to Windows Runtime. So they're both Windows Runtime. We're going to enforce that they follow all the Windows Runtime rules in their contract, but they're both Windows Runtime types. So if you had a method here that took a D as a parameter, that's perfectly valid.
Now, but what if my public class C implemented iXML doc?
There you have a problem. So your public class cannot implement, it cannot have in its public surface area, in its public contract, anything which is not a valid Windows Runtime construct.
Okay.
Now, if you implemented iXML doc, you'd have to publicly implement it somehow, right? It's publicly visible,
yeah.
and that doesn't make sense necessarily to a C++ programmer who doesn't have the definition of that interface.
I understand. So the moral of the story is you have to keep things reasonable enough
yeah.
for the underlying system.
The public area of your object model has to conform to this more restrictive set of rules than a pure managed library would have. Mm-hmm. So this isn't to say you can take an arbitrary managed assembly, just build it with this new compiler switch, and boom, I've got a Windows Runtime object model. That generally will not work, because you're going to take advantage of areas that .NET exposes that is not exposable at the Windows Runtime ABI level.
Interesting.
For instance, using an interface which isn't a Windows Runtime interface. But what we do expect people to do, and what we've done a lot internally, just on our team for testing and mm-hmm. whatnot, is you can take your existing library and say, all right, I can make a Windows Runtime compatible interface over the top of this. Maybe C is just a shim interface that has a private field that it delegates out to, right? You can expose things out and consume, as I was saying here, your private methods, they can use the full .NET surface area. We have no problem in their signatures. And your public methods in their body can do anything you can do in a .NET method. So your actual implementation is entirely unrestricted. You're only restricted in what you can have in your publicly visible surface area.
Okay. So what does this do in some sense for importing namespaces from publicly, you know, from public shared libraries that happen to be on the system?
Yep.
I'm assuming that for Windows RT, or the Windows Runtime, WinRT, that essentially what's happening is the .NET framework that's exposed for people who are expecting it to be there will be smaller.
So you can import as many namespaces as you want, right? That's fine.
Okay.
You can use them in your implementation, and that's fine. You can use them in the signatures of private methods and private fields. Anything you're not exposing out of your assembly is fine.
Okay.
Think of it as if you were to make a reference assembly out of your assembly. What's the minimum set of information you would have to distribute for someone else to just call your code, a header file, if you will, for your assembly? That has to maintain Windows Runtime. Implementation, it can be anything you want.
Got it. Well, thank you for explaining it with the header, because now it makes more sense to me. All right, great.
So what we'll actually do here, if you're doing something like this, if you've got, mm-hmm. I've got some great managed library that I love to use, and I'm using it internally as an implementation detail, it's perfectly legal, but we can't let, you know, the C++ view of Windows Runtime or the JavaScript view see that, because it's not legal Windows Runtime.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to have to force these activatable things. We don't want to force these interfaces onto you. So what we'll do is we actually create two classes behind the scenes.
Mm.
You wrote public class C. What we expose as class C is literally only the raw surface area. None of this private method, no implementation. It's a pure metadata version of class with whatever attributes Windows Runtime would need to, in order to kind of tie the class together. Behind the scenes, we create an internal class for you. And it's called CLR C.
Okay.
And this is where all of your code is. Everything, your private methods, your actual, you know, C-sharp body of all of your other methods, that's all hidden away in this internal class. So when you're writing C++ or JavaScript client code and they want to call C, they see this nice, neat little, it's the header file analogy again.
Mm-hmm.
That's purely encoded in exactly the same way as a Windows metadata file would be if it came from Windows themselves.
Mm-hmm.
When you're using it from the CLR, we see this full, rich, exactly what you've written version of the class.
Okay.
And when we load it up, we do the exact same trick here we were talking about with converting iList and iVector. We say, oh, you're talking about C, but I've got the CLR implementation version. You're really talking about CLR implementation version of C.
Okay.
And so we can swap it so that inside your assembly, you can use, you know, you can have internal fields here, you can have access via whatever you want. You can use the whole of your thing inside your assembly.
Interesting. Makes sense. And that gives people the flexibility to program as though they, which of course is what Windows Runtime wants.
Yes, exactly.
Program in your whatever language you like.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about the interaction between, let's say, C Sharp, since that's the language that a lot of managed developers use in reality. Interaction with JavaScript and C++.
Sure.
And I think we have a nice foundation now to understand why it's going to work pretty seamlessly.
Right.
But
so this is sort of exactly what you would expect. You can expose this class that you just defined out here, C, to JavaScript. Now it's defined in a metadata file. JavaScript might say new C, pass in an instance of your D class.
Mm.
What that's going to do is that's going to go find normal Windows Runtime binding rules and say, go load me up the metadata file which defines C. Now, this is somewhere that managed developers might see an interesting difference. They may not. Mm-hmm. Is that in Windows Runtime, types are the unit of identity, not assemblies. So in managed code, if you have a class named C in assembly 1 and a class named C in assembly 2, those are two distinct types.
Mm-hmm.
In Windows Runtime, it's the fully qualified name of the class. So if it's your namespace plus the class name defines exactly what your type is, and you cannot have two classes with the same name that's the same type.
Mm-hmm.
And given that, Windows provides an API to say, given this type name, go find me the metadata file that defines it, because they actually have an algorithm which, given a type name, will define the set of legal files it might appear in.
Okay.
So they can find us. You know, JavaScript says someone activated up a new C, Windows can go find this Windows metadata file that contains both the implementation and the definition. Then JavaScript will say activate it. Well, this means we need to go find an activation factory like we were talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't write an activation factory, you just wrote a constructor method.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, the CLR behind the scenes has created this activation factory interface for you. And we've done the same signature matching algorithm to say, this I, it'll be called IC factory. And if you use ILDASM on your WinMD file that you generate, you'll see all this stuff. This isn't hidden or, you know, stashed away magic. You can actually use ILDASM to explore all of this. And it'll have a C, or create C, and I'll have a create C method on it that takes your D class. So we will, when Windows asks us for an activation factory, we'll say, sure, we can create an activation factory that's a managed type, and provide Windows with a comp pointer that it can use. And Windows will then say, aha, or JavaScript actually does the signature matching and say, here's the signature that matches to this constructor, and they'll QI for this interface. Then we, behind the scenes, will respond to that QI by saying, okay, this guy does have this constructor. I tied them together with attributes, so I know that I should respond to that QI. Mm-hmm. And further, I know that this method must tie to that constructor. So when JavaScript calls through this to create C method, this really, we just kind of knew up a method behind the scenes again, and this does nothing more than basically return new C, passing in the parameter. So that's how we can create an activation factory in terms of your constructors. So whatever code you write in your constructor will execute.
Hmm.
And you can do, from your perspective, it'll look, if you don't want to dive too deeply behind the scenes, it'll look exactly like JavaScript directly invoked your constructor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because the CLR is bridging the gap between the ABI layer of what CLR, or what the Windows runtime says a constructor is, and the API level of what
JavaScript and C# developers expect a constructor to be.
Okay. Very interesting.
And in the same sort of way, if you've got methods on here, JavaScript can invoke those methods. Now, JavaScript, they've got the same goal that the CLR did for managed developers. They want to make Windows Runtime APIs feel like JavaScript.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if you have a method on here, do stuff, JavaScript will actually switch this from Pascal casing to camel casing.
Oh my
so
God.
It shows up in JavaScript as lowercase do stuff, but it's there. Right? Okay. And so JavaScript code can call camel case do stuff. The JavaScript view of Windows Runtime will turn around and say, okay, I was just something camel cased, so that probably means that the API layer, that was Pascal cased, mm-hmm. so we'll convert it over to this. It will find the interface that this is defined on and call that. The CLR created one of these CCWs that we talked about earlier, which basically is the COM view over your code,
mm-hmm.
because at the end of the day, this is all effectively COM under the covers,
mm-hmm.
that will dispatch to your do stuff method.
Interesting. Very interesting. I mean, JavaScript to me seems like sort of the weirdest thing in this party because, it's mostly untyped.
Yes.
It's purely dynamic. Right. It's a functional programming language. It really doesn't have anything to do with this, the functional part, but it's the typelessness that kind of confuses me a little bit because here you are coming from a very typed-heavy language, such as C#,
right?
And interacting with this thing that's very dynamic and very typeless. I think that's interesting.
So we have some work to support that. So interestingly, if you are an I-list of foo, some random class.
You're an array in JavaScript, right?
Sure. Okay. And that's their view of it. Uh-huh. Right? That's the work that they did. But we'll actually support, if you want a query interface for I-list of object, we'll allow it, right? Because that's the variance that, well, I guess we won't allow it for I-list, but we'll allow it for I-enumerable, right? Because mm-hmm. that's actually a variant interface. And so we'll allow the contravariance to kick in. So we allow sort of a level of type erasure.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's good.
That actually... the support for variants enables data binding at the UI layer, which is nice.
Cool. Yes. Excellent, man. So this seems like it's been a very interesting exercise.
It has been, yeah.
And a very highly simplified runtime. It sounds like Windows runtime is, with the simple number of native types, if you will, or, basic types.
Basic types, sure.
Yeah.
And project or just making those show up into managed code in a way that doesn't feel any different is what we've been focused on, making sure that particularly when you're consuming an existing Windows Runtime API, that just feels right. That just feels like a managed type.
Great. And that, of course, is really important when we talk about the other part of the world here, which is, let's say, the IDE.
Yes.
In Visual Studio. It's important that when you're writing these apps that they feel like you're actually what you're used to writing.
Right. In Visual Studio, I mean, all their support for managed code still works. The object browser will browse through Windows Runtime APIs.
Nice.
So you can actually browse them there. IntelliSense works just like you would expect. You new up a Windows Runtime type and you've got all of its fields and whatnot there.
Mm-hmm.
I said before that, the higher level language features like link, anonymous delegates, all the stuff that you're used to working just sort of works against this.
Mm-hmm.
We've done a lot of string to find the seams and gloss those over as much as we can to make it feel natural.
Great.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, it'll be nice to get this into developers' hands.
It will
hopefully
be.
While
excited.
They're watching this, they're downloading
CTP, yes.
Man.
It's very exciting to talk about.
Cool. Well, it's great to come and see you again. We'll see you again in a couple of years, man.
Well, something new and exciting.
Right on. Take care, buddy.
That's it.
Nice work.